Okay. Good morning, everyone. Welcome, as always, to our Sunday morning shiur. The topic for today's shiur, I was asked when the title went out. I was asked what in the world does this topic have to do with this week's parsha? So we were going to offer. I considered maybe we should offer a reward if anyone could figure out what the connection to the parsha is. But in fact, there is a decent connection to Parshas Vayera based on the Gemara that we have here on the sheet, Gemara and Brachas Daf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. The Gemara there says, Tanu Rabbanan Mahu Omer, the Gemara is discussing the bracha that's said on bread, and the Gemara says, what exactly is the bracha that's said on bread? So we have the Machlokas here. The first opinion is Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz, which is the bracha that we're familiar with. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz, we would translate that to mean who has brought bread forth from the ground. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Motzi Lechem Min Haaretz. Okay, Rabbi Nechemya says that the bracha should be said Motzi without a hay. Motzi Lechem Min Haaretz. Why is that? So the Gemara says, Omer Rava, but Motzi Kuliyama Lo Pligi Da'apik Mashma, says the Gemara, because the issue here is, does the word mean, the idea that we're trying to convey when we say the bracha is that we're praising Hashem for having already brought forth bread from the ground. In other words, the bread that we have has already been brought forth. So the question is, does the word Hamotzi refer to the past or the future? Does it mean Hamotzi who has already taken the bread out of the ground, or Hamotzi who will in the future take bread out of the ground? So the Gemara says that the word motzi, on the other hand, without the hay, clearly means that it has already been achieved. The ksiv, because we have the pasuk in Parshas Boa, kel motziyom mi Mitzrayim. That Bilam said, kel motziyom, without a hay, kel motziyom, God who has taken them out of Egypt. So clearly, the word motzi refers to a past event. So the Gemara says, ki pligi b'hamotzi. However, when it says hamotzi, that's where the issue comes about, because Rabbanan Savri hamotzi de'apik mashma. Because the Rabbanan hold that the word hamotzi means that it happened in the past. The ksiv, hamotzi l'chamayi mitzurach ha'wamish, because we find the pasuk that refers to the word motzi in the past, that Hashem has taken water out from the rock. Reb Nechemya Savar Hamotzi Dimapik Mashma, whereas Reb Nechemya holds that the word Hamotzi is not a past tense word, but rather a future tense word. Who will take us out of Mitzrayim? Who will take the bread out of the ground? How do we know that? And here we have the connection to the parsha Shenemar, because it says in the very beginning of Parshas Vayera, Hamotzi Eschem Mitachas Siblos Mitzrayim. Right, the pasuk says, "V'idatem ki ani Hashem olkechem hamotzi eschem mitachas siblos Mitzrayim." Now, this pasuk was said to Moshe before the actual Yetzias Mitzrayim, before the Exodus from Egypt took place. So here it's referring to a future event, and it says hamotzi. So says Reb Nechemya that therefore the word hamotzi, you see in the pasuk, refers to something that's going to happen, and therefore for a person to say the bracha hamotzi lechem in haaretz wouldn't be appropriate, because that would mean that Hashem will take bread out of the ground, and you're thanking for Hashem for the bread that was already taken out of the ground. Okay, that's what the Gemara says, and the Rabbanan come and say that's not true. The Rabbanan dispute this from our pasuk, because they say hachi kamar luhu kachabrichu Yisrael. The Rabbanan say that you can't just take one phrase out of the pasuk. You have to look at the entire pasuk, because the entire pasuk reads in Parshas Vayera, it says that I will do v'akachti eschem li lo'am be'desi eschem el ha'arzos v'idatem ki ani Hashem lo'keichem hamotzi eschem mitachas siblos Mitzrayim. The pasuk was referring to that Hashem says, "Voltesi v'itzalti, I'm going to take you out. I'm going to save you. I'm going to bring you to Eretz Yisrael, and then v'idatem, then you will know ki ani Hashem lokeichem hamotzi eschem mitachas Mitzrayim. At that time, you will realize that I am Hashem who has taken you out of Mitzrayim." So Reb Nechemya says that even that if you look at the context of the pasuk. The context of the pasuk is talking about a future event. In other words, something that's going to happen, and at that time, in retrospect, you will know that I took you out of Mitzrayim. So therefore, the Rabbanan say that the word Hamotzi is still appropriate to refer to the past, and in fact, this is the halacha. The halacha we paskin like the Chachamim, that we say the bracha, as everybody knows, we say the bracha on bread, Hamotzi lechem min haaretz. One could ask that if everyone agrees that motzi is an appropriate expression, and hamotzi has any bit of controversy to it, so what are we looking for trouble? Why don't we just say the bracha motzi lechem min haaretz, which is safe by all accounts? So Tosfos there in Brachos is not on the sheet, but Tosfos on the top of the next Amud of Lamed Chesed Beis, Tosfos says that when they formulated the brachos, they were concerned about putting it motzi lechem min haaretz, because then the bracha would read Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Ha'olam motzi lechem min haaretz. The word Ha'olam ends with the letter Mem, and the word motzi begins with the letter Mem, and as such, it would be very easy to swallow the words, because you would say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Ha'olam motzi lechem min haaretz. You would not enunciate the differential between the two words Ha'olam and motzi. So therefore, a hay was put in, even though there is some controversy in the Gemara, but hay was put in, so we say the bracha, ha-motzi lechem min haaretz, and this would point out to us the importance of enunciating all the words properly when we say a bracha. And then we once spoke about this, but here again you see an example that, with a lot of times we get so used to saying brachas and it becomes just a matter of rote that we just quickly swallow it up. But here, the formulation of the bracha was made in such a way that it should not allow for a word to be swallowed up. Of course, if you think through, you'll say, but wait a minute, but that's inconsistent with the rest of the bracha, because it says, Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz, right? So lechem and min have the same problem. In other words, you say ha'olam and motzi would have that problem, but the way the rest of the bracha reads also has that problem, because ha'motzi lechem min ha'aretz, right? So there, Satosis yes, points that out, and says that, but nevertheless, that's based on the pasuk, which we just said yesterday in the Barchi Nafshi, that there's the expression that Hashem brings forth, motzi lechem min ha'aretz, is found in a pasuk in Tehillim. So therefore, that was left intact. In other words, when they formulated the bracha, they left the bracha according to the pasuk. Okay, whatever else. So that if David HaMelech said it that way, they left it that way. But nevertheless, hecha de'efsher, to whatever degree it's possible, we try not to have that happen. In other words, we find in several places. In davening, you have this also. In Kriya Shema, you have it. V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha v'chol levavcha. You have the same issue that the word ends with a lamed and the next word begins with a lamed. There are many examples like that. So we try. A person should try to say it slowly so that every word is pronounced and not swallowed up. But if you have a bracha that's based on a pasuk in Tehillim, with the expression lechem min haaretz is found in the pasuk, so that they left, the rabbanim weren't going to tamper with that. But the first part of the bracha, which is the original, that part the rabbanim sort of made up themselves. So, given the choice of saying hamotzi or motzi, they made it hamotzi, so you would solve that problem. So this is the Gemara, and thus we all know that we have the bracha of hamotzi lechem min haaretz, which is a basic bracha that we say all the time, and that would be the connection to Parshas Va'era. Now, what I would like to speak about today is a very basic shaila, which comes up all the time, and especially by us today, the way the style of the way we eat our meals, and that is what exactly is covered by the bracha of Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. Everybody knows that this is like the magical bracha. Every other bracha that we say applies limited to only foods of that type. If a person says the bracha bar creates and he's sitting at the same meal, he's going to eat, he's going to eat an apple and a Danish, so he would have to say it's a different bracha bar mini mazonos. And if he wanted to drink it down, wash it down with a cup of juice or milk or coffee, whatever it may be, he would have to say another bracha on the drink. Yet, the bracha of Hamotzi is the magical bracha that a person sits down to a meal, person sits, whether it's Shabbos or during the week, and says Hamotzi, and abracadabra, all the other foods that are eaten in the meal, you don't have to say a bracha on. Right, as we know. And the question is, why is that? And does that, in fact, cover every other food? Is it correct to just assume as a general blanket rule that it covers everything else? So, as far as why it covers all the food, we'll see in a moment. But first, we have to turn, if you turn over the page to here, to this Gemara in Brachas, on Daf Mem Aleph on its base, which is really the foundation of this whole discussion. Okay, the Gemara here tells us, the Gemara discusses what happens if a person is eating bread and then fruit was brought to him. Does he have to say a different bracha on the fruit or not? The whole discussion, there are three opinions in the Gemara, and finally, the Gemara comes to a conclusion, which I apologize, it's not marked off, but I would say it's about 12 lines from the bottom, in the Gemara, in the text of the Gemara, Amar Rav Papa. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Papa, Hilchasa. Rav Papa says the halacha is, Tvarim haboim machmas hasuda, b'soch hasuda, that anything that comes up in the middle of the meal, that can be attributed to the meal, that is because of the meal, so ein tun and bracha lo lifnan v'lo lachrei. The Gemara says such foods do not require a bracha, not a bracha rishona, not a bracha achrona. Anything that comes because of the meal does not require a bracha at all. Meaning that the bracha of hamotzi would cover it, and the Birchas HaMazon at the end would cover the bracha achroni. You would not have to say a particular bracha for this food. Now what type of food is that referring to? We'll see in a moment. And now the Gemara just goes a step further, and Rav Papa says, but b'shalom machmas asuda b'soch asuda, but if there is food that's eaten in the middle of a meal, but it is not really, cannot really be considered that it came about because of the suda, so then, says Rav Papa, that tu'unim bracha lifneiam, the ain tu'unim bracha lachreiam. Those foods do require a bracha in advance. They require their own bracha rishona, but not a bracha achrona. Meaning, clearly, we see here in the Gemara that the magical bracha of hamotzi has its, while it, on the one hand, it's very encompassing and has the ability to exempt brachas made on foods, but it doesn't work 100% of the time. Meaning that there are certain times that in the middle of a meal, a person would have to say another bracha rishona on that particular food item. And what is the qualification for that category? So the Gemara says, if it's coming not due to the meal, which is very vague, very hard to understand what that means. Now, before we look into that, just for the record, there's a third classification which Rav Papa mentions also, which is almost never found in our times the way we eat. It was really, the Mefarshim say, the Poskim say, was really only found in the olden days in the time of the Gemara, that people at the end of a meal would actually take away the tables and would they would take away the whole table, not just the bread, but the whole table that they ate on and eat a dessert. And that would give rise to a third category, but because of the fact that we almost never have such a situation, I'm not going to get into it because it'll just be very confusing. So we're going to leave it with two basic categories. Okay, the two basic categories. Yeah.
That applies to
Viennese table. Okay, so Viennese. Yeah, waiting for that. So Viennese table. a Viennese table. It probably doesn't apply to the way we have it, because at most affairs where they have a Viennese table, at least the ones that I've been to, you still have your table where you ate. In other words, if the Viennese table is in a different room and everybody left and they set up tables there, that might be different. That might be. But if that could be that happens. But it is a simpler thing where they roll out the Viennese table into the dining hall and then you just take the stuff and bring it back to your table you ate in, it probably would not be the case. So you could have it. It might be a good idea for that reason if anyone is thinking of doing such a thing to speak to a rav, but for the ramifications of the brachas. The reason I'm not going to discuss that is it'll just get too complicated. I'd rather stay away from that. It's not common. But commonly, we have a situation. You have food that comes for the meal and food that comes shalom machmas hasuda. Okay, so what are these different designations? What are these two different types of foods? So if you look here, so Rashi, there's a big machlokas in Rishonim here, as one could imagine. Anytime the Gemara makes a vague statement, anyone who's familiar with learning the Gemara knows that anytime there's a vague statement, you're going to always have different opinions what the Gemara meant. It's almost guaranteed, and you read this Gemara, as soon as you see, you say, okay, here we go, there's going to be 10 opinions. But so here we have a big argument amongst the Rishonim, and we'll try to narrow it down. Rashi says on the side of the page, Rashi says that what does it mean, food that comes due to a meal? What does that mean? So Rashi says that food that comes due to a meal means, if you look at the Rashi about six lines before the lines get wide in Rashi, that means that it's coming to enhance the bread that you're eating. The food that's coming to enhance the bread that you're eating, which simply understood would mean that anything that you eat together with bread. So for example, if a person is having, let's say, bread and butter. So obviously the bracha on the butter is smeared right onto the bread. Clearly, in that case, that would be something that the Gemara is referring to. You would not have to say a bracha on the butter. Okay? Similarly, if a person was putting slices of cheese or meat inside of a sandwich, right? So that also would be considered that it's lalafes as hapas because of the fact that you're eating it together with the bread. Okay? However, if it were not that, well, let's stick with that for a moment. So that those things, the butter, the cheese, would not require a bracha. Why not? So let's look at the next Rashi. Rashi says the havaluhu tfeila, that the reason why it does not require a bracha is because it is considered secondary to the bread. And this brings us to a concept that is fundamental, one of the basic concepts in the laws of brachas, and that is the concept of the law of ikar and tuchel, that if a person eats two food items together, but one of them is considered primary and one of them is considered secondary, so the halacha is that you make a bracha only on the primary and not on the secondary. If a person is eating French fries with ketchup, so even though ketchup, it could be a question what bracha you would say on it, but if a person were eating, let's just say for a moment the bracha would be shakol, which might be questionable. So then in that case, it doesn't matter because the bracha, you would say, would only be the bracha bar fri adama because the ketchup is enhancing the French fries. Okay? Similarly, if you had a situation where you had two items that were mixed together, but one was the majority element, one was the majority and one was the minority, you had a mixture of food that they're mixed together, and one is, amongst the two ingredients, one is greater than the other. Like, for example, you had a cup of fruit cocktail, okay, and you had in that mainly grapes and peaches or things like that, but you also had mixed in maybe one or two strawberries or pineapple, which the bracha would be bar pri adama. So the halacha is, we all know that it generally speaking requires only one bracha, and the majority element is what carries it. Okay, that's the concept of ikar and tuffel. This is found in a Mishnah. If you turn back the page for a second, this is found in the Mishnah of Brachos and Daf Mem Beis Amid Aleph, which I'm not going to get into, but the Mishnah basically says that if you skip down a couple of lines, Berech al hapas patras aparperas, that if a person says a bracha, it's really not just from there, but from the entire Mishnah, we learn out the halacha that a person says the bracha only on the primary element. So therefore, if that is the case, so Rashi says that the reason why Hamotzi will tell you that you don't have to make a bracha on the cheese when you make a sandwich or on the deli that you put inside a pastrami sandwich, right? And that you put inside the bread. So the reason for that is because the bread is deemed to be the ikar. The bread is deemed to be the dominant element. They'll say, but isn't that strange? The pastrami costs far more than the bread does, right? So therefore, in terms of chashivos, that is more. But nevertheless, the attitude always was that in the world, the primary staple of all meals was bread. And while that clearly has changed in our time, but in pretty much the history of eating, from the beginning, from Adam Arishon, who was told "Bzeis Apecha Toch Alechem," pretty much straight to our time, right? We have the famous pasuk "Alechem Levado Yichye HaAdam." The man doesn't live on bread alone, but the implication of that pasuk is that bread is basic, right? In other words, the bread alone won't do it, but bread is the foundation of all meals. So therefore, a person have, and the fact of the matter is that the reason for that is because bread fills a person up. A person, it takes a few slices of bread will fill a person up far more than multiple pieces of chicken, right? Because of the fact that it's just the way it is, that it fills you up. So therefore, when you're having a sandwich, the bread is considered primary, and as such, whatever you put in the sandwich is secondary to the bread, and as such, the bracha of Hamotzi covers it. So says Rashi. However, it says Rashi, if you had food that is not typically eaten with bread, for example, a piece of potato kugel, okay, a piece of chicken, which, okay, you could argue that maybe you would put in bread, but maybe not, something like that. Fish, people don't generally eat that with bread. Filter fish, certainly, right? So what would be then? So Rashi says, in the next Rashi says that would require a bracha. That would require a bracha. Why? Because that can't be considered secondary to the bread. So says Rashi. Okay, now if this sounds strange, that's because we don't pass the malacha like Rashi, but this is what he's saying. Okay, Rashi gives the example of daisa, which refers to like some sort of porridge. That's the way it's translated in all the English Gemaras and the Talmudic dictionaries, but also, I guess, you know, cooked items, things like that are typically not eaten with bread. They don't go together, right? Especially something that is a looser consistency. You can't put in a sandwich. It just doesn't go. So therefore, those things, according to Rashi, would require their own bracha. Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to get into it later or not. You have a full meal in front of you.
Yeah.
A million brachas.
Yeah.
All you have available is not lechem. You don't have masa. You don't have bread. You have a piece of cake.
Right.
And you make up what's on a piece of cake, point one. Point two,
You're
walking into a Chinese restaurant.
Yes.
They don't have only bread to wash by.
Yes.
There's a million brachas around you.
Right.
Can you wash on an egg roll or can you wash on the noodles?
Okay, so noodles, you cannot. Okay, that's a lot of questions.
You
cannot wash on noodles or egg rolls. You cannot. Those things you absolutely cannot wash on, because those things are not considered.
All right.
Those things are not considered bread by anyone's definition because they lack what's called teraisa d'nama. Those things don't have the appearance of bread, that which in halacha is a little bit different than what we would think. But the noodles are not considered bread. Even people during the Aseret Yemei Teshuva who are careful only to eat the Pas Yisrael. But, you know, people always say, what about the spaghetti? What about noodle? It doesn't apply to any of that stuff because it's not bread. It's not pas under anyone's definition. Cake is a little different. Cake, if it would be eaten in very, very, very large quantities, which nobody normally eats, we could theoretically say the bracha amotzi. I will get to that. But the fact of the matter is that cake also you can't say amotzi. So therefore, in a situation like that, you have to make the individual bracha. Okay, so here we have it. So according to Rashi Shita, we have the opinion that the only thing that Amotzi would cover would be things that you can pretty much either smear onto bread or put in a sandwich. However, this is contested by the other Rishonim, Tosfos on the side of the page, and the Rush, both strongly, Rashbas, all strongly disagree with Rashi for various reasons. So if you look on the right-hand side, there's a Tosfos that begins with the words Hilchasa, so it's a long Tosfos, lengthy Tosfos. The last four lines, Al-Kain Pirish Ri. So Tosfos quotes the Ri HaZakim, one of the foremost of the Balei HaTosfos, who says that what is referred to over here, Varim Abon Machmas Asuda Kloma Haragilim Lovo Machmas Asuda Vipas Sharagilim Levo Impas Kidon Bosar Vidogim. Says Tosfos that not only would the bread exempt things that would be typically put in a sandwich, but even things which are not put in a sandwich, like bread and fish, like meat and fish, which generally, even though theoretically you could make a sandwich out of them, but typically the way it's eaten at a meal, a person eats, sits down, eats meat, the person has a steak, he doesn't put it in bread, generally speaking. Yeah, there is such a thing called a steak sandwich, but typically when a person has a steak, he doesn't eat it that way. Okay? And nevertheless, you don't have to say a bracha on that either. Now, why should that be? You'll say, what? You know, here, it's one thing if you tell me that we have a concept of Iker and Tuffel, we have a concept that you make the bracha on the primary, not on the secondary. That's if they're being eaten together. But here, you're not eating them together. Right? In other words, you had bread, and now you're having a steak. Right? You sat down to wash, and then they brought you out the main course, you're sitting at a restaurant, they brought you out the steak. So, nobody's gonna eat that with bread. So why would that be considered secondary to the bread? So Tosus does not spell it out, but in the Rush, which I don't have on the sheet, but the Rush says that the explanation is kivan de ikar sudahim. The Rush says that the chiddush of this Gemara, Rav Papa's chiddush, in other words, one of the challenges, just for the record, one of the reasons why they reject Rashi's pshat is because they say, according to Rashi, Rav Papa isn't telling us anything that we didn't know before. Everybody knows that when there's a primary and a secondary, you make the bracha only on the primary. So therefore, it was to say that if you put cheese in a sandwich, you don't say a bracha on the cheese, that's, nobody's surprised by that. Why do we need Rav Papa to say that for? So Tosus, on the other hand, says, and the Rush agrees, that the chiddush that's being said here is that even if something could be considered secondary, even if it is not being eaten together with the bread. Why? So the way it's explained by the Rush is because the bread is considered the center point, like the foundation of the meal. And since bread is the foundation of the meal, even though you can eat many other things, but since that's the foundation, so therefore that's considered like the executive director of the meal, so to speak. That's considered the MVP of the meal. And anything that comes after that is considered part of a bread meal. And this is a chiddush in the concept of Iker and Tuffel. In other words, we know that when you have primary and secondary foods mixed together, you stay on the primary. But here we have a special chiddush. Here we have a chiddush, even though you're not eating them together. You had the bread first, and now you're having these other food items. Nevertheless, it is considered to be secondary to the bread. That is Rav Papa's chiddush, as explained by Tosus and the Rush. So therefore, now we have broadened it closer to home. So now when you sit down to have a meal on Shabbos and a person has gefilte fish, which he does not eat with bread, and soup, which he does not eat with bread, and meat or chicken, which he does not eat with bread, and potato kugel, which he does not eat with bread, and cholent, which he does not eat with bread, all of those things are still covered by the bracha of Hamotzi. Why? Because we have here this new concept that in a bread meal, bread is considered the dominant element. It's considered the foundation, like the Rosh, the chairman of the meal, like the Rosh HaMeal. Like you have a Rosh HaYeshiva, you have a Rosh HaKol, you have a Rosh HaMeal. What's the Rosh HaMeal? The bread, right? Puts on a kapata, and sits it right on the challah, and that's why you cover it over, the new reason why you cover over the challah on the Shabbos meal, is a new explanation. And that's because this is the Rosh, this is the Rosh Yeshiva of the meal. Okay? And therefore, that becomes the only bracha. Okay, so this includes almost everything, many, many things. Okay? It even includes, the Mishnah Berurah says, I'm going to try to save time, the Mishnah Berurah says it would even include condiments to the meal, would also be included pickles, olives, coleslaw, all those things would also be considered the secondary, and therefore all of those things could be eaten at a meal without a bracha. However, we see clearly in the Gemara, in other words, according to this broader interpretation of Tosfos in the Rush, more things are included, but nonetheless, you can't forget about the other thing that Rav Papa said. Rav Papa said two things. Rav Papa said that there are foods that are part of the meal, and those foods do not require a bracha. But then he also said that there are foods that are not part of the meal that do require a bracha. Now, what would those refer to? So Tosus here says, if you look back at the Tosus, he says that in the last two lines of that lengthy Tosus, he says, "Avol dvarim she'ein darko lavo v'sochasuda But the things that do not typically come in the middle of a meal, kagon, tamarim, verimonim, vishar kol peros, she'en regil and lafis benazapas, says Tosfos, but things which are eaten, which do have no connection to the bread whatsoever. Like, for example, if you were to eat fruit, like pomegranates, or dates, or other peros, okay, so then, ein hapas potrasam. Those things are not exempted by the bracha of Hamotzi. That's the second half of what Rav Kook was saying. Okay, that's what comes out. So, this opinion of Tosfos and the Rosh is actually the opinion that carries the day. It's brought in the Shulchan Aruch this way, in Siman Kuf Ayin Zayin, Sifalot, the Psak Halacha, that's we're familiar. That's why, this is the reason why when you eat a meal, you don't say a bracha on bread, on anything, you know, the main courses, you don't say a bracha, even though you have pretty much every bracha. Like I say, your gefilte fish would be a shahakol, and you know, the kugel, you could have a noodle kugel, your shami kugel would be a mizonos, and potato kugel would be a hadama, and the meat or the chicken would be also shahakol, salad, all pickles, all these things. You have all the spectrum of brachas, nevertheless, none of them are set. And not only that, but drinks, also we don't say a bracha on drinks, because of the same idea that the drink is also part of the main meal, because the reason why you're drinking, presumably, is because you're thirsty due to the food that you ate. Okay? You're thirsty due to the food that you ate, so therefore, if a person drinks water or soda or a juice, whatever it may be, in the middle of a meal, since that is washing down the food, and the reason why he has the need to drink in the middle of a meal is because eating makes a person thirsty, so therefore, that also is exempt. Just for the record, I don't want to create big chumras here, but there is a serious question, which is discussed in the Shulchan Aruch, if a person was very thirsty before he began to eat, whether in fact that if he then washed, whether he then he washes, he says, I'm so thirsty, right? But let's start the meal and I'll drink. So the question whether that water, if he drinks water, he might have to say a bracha, because that water that he's drinking was not caused by the fact that he's eating food, but rather it's because he came home from shul in the 80 degree heat and became very thirsty. So that is a question, but I don't want to get involved with that. Typically, you don't have to worry about that because of the fact that the person made kiddush, so the broth on the wine would exempt that drink anyway, so I'm not going to make an issue out of that. But I'm just trying to point out, just in the context of understanding the halacha, in other words, the reason why food brachas are not said in the middle of meals is because the bread is considered the foundation of the meal, and therefore that is the primary element. That's like the head of the meal, the rosh hasuda. And anything that comes in a meal that is that the bread presides over, that's due to the meal. So if it's coming as an appetizer, meaning that it's coming to what the poskim say, well, orer taiva ta'ochel, that's coming to make a person interested in eating more, anything like that, or anything, drinks that wash down the food, condiments that enhance the meal, all those things are covered. However, fruit, Tosfos says clearly, and this is brought in the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Kuf Ayin Zayin Tefal. The Shulchan Aruch says that if you look here on page 3, so we have here the Shulchan Aruch starts off quoting the Shita of Tosfos. I'm not going to read the whole thing. We'll go down to the last two lines of the Mechaber. He says, "Bimheim tvarim haboim shalom achmasuda." If there are things that are not connected to the meal, the type of thing that is not generally associated with bread in any way, kegon te'enim, for example, figs, vanovim, or grapes, v'chomine peros, or any other types of peros, actually turns over the page here, right? So it says, im ocholosam. So now the basic rule is going to be that a person would have to say a bracha on them unless he eats them together with bread. If he eats them together with bread, then he would not have to say the bracha, because then he's saying that in his way of eating, in his mode of eating, this is also associated with the bread. But typically it's not. Okay? So he says, if he eats it without bread, tuun and bracha lefnam, the birchas hamotzi ain't a potrasam, the lav me ikar sudahem. They are not considered part of the main meal. Now, this gives rise to a lot of questions in the way we have meals today. Okay? Because the style of eating, we know, it changes over time, and especially today, we've seen major, major changes with the people today, far more health conscious, and for the what's eaten at a meal, the old traditional Jewish meal of chopped liver, you know, the high cholesterol, right, the cardiologists of the world can all attest to this, right, that the chopped liver and the schmaltz and all the other wonderful things, right, that people eat, which have since been determined to not be necessarily the healthiest thing for a person's heart. So today, and what's that?
Donuts,
right, alright, we'll get to donuts. But things like that. So today, people in general, so while the Shabbos meal I think has remained largely intact, but cholent will always be cholent. I think it's the peak popularity today. Cholent, they sell it even in gas stations, as we know, nowadays. But the fact of the matter is that, I don't think it was ever more than it is today. But the fact is that in other ways we have changed the style in which we eat. So I'd like to just go through a few points that come up in the typical meal that we eat to see if in fact we can say that the food is covered or not. Yes?
Before we go any further.
Yeah.
The Birch HaMazon attached to the bread.
Birch HaMazon attached to the bread, but the Birch HaMazon would cover anything that even fruit would be covered by the Birch HaMazon. Even if you have to make a broth on the fruit, which we'll soon see. If you don't eat bread, then there's nothing to talk about. You have to, with the whole discussion here is if you ate bread. You have to also have, just for the record, a person really has to have at least a kazayas of bread, really, I'm not going to get into that, but a person really, you know, there's a minimum amount of bread you have to eat. It's not only in order to bench, but for other things also. In fact, it's brought that in order for the Birchus HaMotzi to exempt all these other foods, a person has to eat at least a kazayas of bread. That, in other words, if a person just has a few crumbs of bread, then it does not cover anything. Then it wouldn't cover fish or meat either. In other words, the whole halacha, and it makes sense it should be that way, because the whole idea that bread exempts other foods is because of the fact that, like we said, that's the foundation, the cornerstone of the meal. But if you're really not having any of it, and you just have a few crumbs because you want to say the bracha of hamotzi, then it creates a lot of problems. So just for the record, it's a discussion in itself, but really a person, especially on Shabbos, a person should really just take a slice or two of challah and then you can move on. But to just have a little bit, even a person who's health conscious, it creates a lot of questions. The question, if you could say the bracha al nefilas yadayim, if you have less than a kebeya, there's a lot of questions that come up. So therefore, it's preferable a person should just take one good slice of challah and eat it, and then you don't want to eat more than that, that's fine, but that a person should eat. Generally, that's not an issue, but you know, sometimes today it might be. So anyway, getting back to now. So what do we have in our meals? Okay, so a person comes home from shul Shabbos morning, sits down, and very commonly finds on the plate the first course is fruit, some sort of melon, or some sort of, or a half a grapefruit, or a fruit cup, or something like that. Okay, now it seems clear from the poskim that in the old times this was not done. And the reason for that was because the meals that they had more of a strategy to them. In other words, you had an appetizer, right? You ate something that sort of whet your appetite, sort of got you in the mood of eating, and then you moved on, mechayel ochayel, right? You went from the first course to the main course, that's the way it is in restaurants. Right, they'll offer you something to have first as a nash, but they're offering serious food. You know, they'll give you some wings or some ribs or whatever it may be, and then you go to the next thing. But it was not in the olden times the custom to have sweet food at the beginning of a meal, because of the fact that having sweet food at the beginning of a meal doesn't really do anything to a person to sort of make them hungrier or make them more interested in eating other things. It's more of like a refreshing way to start off the meal, which in our times has become prevalent. But in the context of the halacha, the question now is, so how does that stack up? It's really not, Shulchan Aruch says clearly that a person eating fruit has to say a bracha. So you'll say, well, maybe that's if you eat the fruit for dessert, hey, you're eating the fruit as a course. But does that really make a difference? So this is one of the big questions in our times, that on one hand, the argument that the traditionalists will say you know, they'll quote you chapter and verse and say, look, it says in the Shulchan Aruch that it doesn't cover fruit, period. So if a person is going to have a half a grapefruit at the beginning of a meal, even if he just said Hamotzi, he has to say the Bracha Bar Pri Ha'etz in order to eat the grapefruit. That's what some people say. And other people say, no, but on the other hand, the fact that it's so common reflects the change in eating habits. And if it reflects that, so then maybe it's a course. It's a course, not a dessert. It's being eaten as a course. You'll say, why do people do that? Who can, you know, like at a certain point, why must I answer that question? You know, why do people, it's done, period. If it's done, we should do it. So this question has been debated for the last many years. And the various modern-day svarim that are printed in the laws of brachas actually have different opinions. In fact, one says that what it says and the other one isn't accurate. But whatever the case may be, it seems that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was of the opinion that a person does have to say a bracha on that. And when the writer, the person who wrote the sefer, questioned him and said, but they serve it as the first course, he said that just means that today we have taken to serving dessert as the entree. But that doesn't mean that it changes the nature of the meal. In other words, that it doesn't do anything for you to eat that. It's just refreshing, but it doesn't enhance the eating of the subsequent food that's going to come. That is what he said. Okay, in the English book, the same bracha, the laws of brachas by Rabbi Pinchas Badner, it says that he claims he asked Rabbi Yashiv, and Rav Yashuv said the opposite. Rav Yashuv said that the person does not have to say a bracha on that, and because it's the beginning of the meal, and that's the way we eat today, and it's just, you know, and it's part of the meal, and that's it. That's what he claims. There is a subsequent development, a sefer called the Zosa Bracha, which came out years later, where he claims that he also asked Rav Yashuv, and then that it was not understood correctly what it said in the first book. Whatever the case may be, it's hard to know. So there are people that say, there are definitely people that say that you don't. There are people that say that you do and people that say that you don't. So I would imagine if a person doesn't make a bracha, it could well be that there's yesh al milismoth, there is who to rely upon. If a person wants to be meticulous here in this area and avoid all issues, there are several ways to get around it. There are several ways to get around it. That's one way, right? Okay. Way number one is not to have that as the main course. That's the first course, right? That would be simple, right? But beyond that, there are two other things that are put forth, which not necessarily found. There are three other options. Four in total. Okay. The first one is don't do it. Okay. The second one is to eat it with bread, which is not to have some bread with it, which also a lot of people would say, what kind of thing is that? You have a grapefruit with bread, it's weird. It sort of defeats the purpose, but there are people that do that. Okay, another possible thing that a person could do would be to take a fruit which clearly has no place in a meal, such as, let's say, an apple. Okay, I don't know that would ever be eaten as a first course in a meal. You never see that, right? You'll see maybe a citrus fruit, or you'll see some the sweeter fruits like grapes and things like that in a fruit cocktail. But a straight apple or something like that, I don't know that that's the type of thing that anybody would eat. So there you clearly would have to say the bracha bar creates, and you could say the bracha on that, and that would exempt the first course. That's a third thing that people do. Another thing that people do, which is not well known, but it's halachically sound, is that there are people that before they say hamotzi, take a fruit and take a piece of a fruit and say the bracha bar creates and have in mind that should cover whatever they're going to have in the meal, and lest one say that, yeah, but that's a bracha shein tzricha, because who says you need to do that? So the answer to that is that it's not considered unnecessary if it's coming to exempt the suffix. In other words, that's a general concept, that a bracha that's being said to prevent the suffix is not considered bracha shein tzricha, and therefore, in order to be doing it ahead of time to prevent something that is you know it's coming, so you're going to take action, a preemptive strike. Before I sit down to have hamotzi, I'm going to have a little piece of an apple or a grape or an orange or whatever it is. Of course, if you eat too much of it, then you have a question. You have to say bracha achrona. But if you just had a little piece, that would do it.
Yes, so does the hefty sandwich that you're having as a meal require an extra piece of bread?
Yes.
Because of the kazayis has to be eaten.
No. Well, okay. That truth is, that's a good point. In other words, yeah, there is also, I don't want to create too many problems here, there's a thing that the bread has to be eaten because the meal is crass. But if you eat a sandwich, typically you would have that, often you would have that. But yeah, it's better always to just have a little bread first, straight up. Okay? But the people eating sandwiches generally don't do that, but whatever. Okay, we'll leave that. We'll leave that. Okay, so that's as far as the bread, that's as far as the fruit at the beginning of the meal. So there are all kinds of opinions. So I'm just saying this, I'm not saying a conclusive fact here. A person could ask their own Rav what the din would be, but I'm just saying that in case you see someone doing this, if you have a guest at your meal and you see him saying the bracha bar priyeh on the fruit cup at the beginning, and you think to yourself, oh, he doesn't trust the hamotzi that I said, you'd be insulted by that. So you should just realize it has nothing to do with that. It's because the hamotzi may not cover it. So a lot of people just assume that it does, they claim that the Rebbe Yashiv said that, and you could definitely hear that. You could hear that, you could hear it Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's way also, you could hear both sides of that argument, but whatever the case may be, you could either not say a bracha, or you could take one of these steps in order to deal with it. Okay, that's as far as that goes. Okay, moving right along. Now, a person on a minig yisroel by many people, a Friday night meal. After all, we know there's a halacha that one is not supposed to eat fish and meat together. So therefore, there is a long-standing minig that a person makes a l'chaim at a Friday night meal. I don't know if today is as common as it used to be, but it's very traditional that a person would take out some scotch and make a l'chaim. Maybe it's just an excuse to have a drink, from excuse to have a drink. But this is what people did. So now the question is, do you have to say a bracha on the scotch? So you will say, well, why should you? It's a drink in the middle of the meal. But on the other hand, that drink is not associated with the meal per se, because typically, in other words, what do you drink in a meal? Because of the fact that you're thirsty. Why am I thirsty? Because I had food, so I'm going to drink water, soda, juice, whatever it may be, to quench my thirst that came about from the meal. But whiskey has nothing to do with that. No one drinks that. I mean, not, other than the shikurim of the world, don't drink that to quench their thirst. Right, a person says, I'm thirsty, so take Johnny Walker to quench my thirst. So there is a question, one could ask that question. However, the Mishnah Berurah rules, it's on the page here, but I'm going to try to save time. The Mishnah Berurah says that whiskey is considered something that enhances the meal for probably more than one reason, but it makes it that a person is actually interested in eating more. That it is coming, also like the type of thing that makes it, makes the person interested in furthering eating more food, and therefore the typical halacha is that on whiskey a person does not say a bracha. Now, wine in the middle of a meal. Okay, so wine in the middle of a meal, you would say, wine should be easier to justify than whiskey, because wine people commonly drink with meals, and that should be a no-brainer that it should be covered. However, the halacha we have here, let's see if I have it on the sheet. No, actually, it's here indirectly, but to save time. The Shulchan Aruch says in Simen Kufayin Dalet, Sif Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch says, it's not on the sheet per se, but you'll trust me on this. He says that Yayin Shebesoch HaSuda, that wine that is consumed in the middle of a meal, Mevarech Alav Bar Priyagofen, a person must say a bracha Bar Priyagofen, the Ein HaPas Potro, and the bread does not exempt it. The bread does not exempt it. Now why should that be? So says the Mishnah Berurah, quoting Poskim, that even though it's clear that the reason why the person is drinking the wine is sort of to chase down the food, but nevertheless, he says, and this is in the Gemara, that since wine is chashuv, wine is very prestigious, wine is what's called kaveh bracha atzmo, it has its own bracha, so therefore, out of respect for wine is not considered secondary. Okay, so therefore wine, a person would have to say a bracha even in the middle of a meal. So if a person during the week is having wine at a meal for which they had bread, you would have to say the bracha bar kriya gofen, even though it's clear that that's the drink of the meal. They're not just making a l'chaim, they're having the wine, which is very common, that people drink wine for that purpose. Okay, so that if a person goes to a restaurant, you're assuming you had bread. If you didn't have bread, you surely have to say a bracha. But even if you had bread, and now you want to have a glass of wine, you have to say a bracha bar priya gofen. So you'll say, what kind of thing is that? Every Shabbos I do this, I never heard of such a halacha. The answer is, on Shabbos, you don't have to do that, because Kiddush, you said a bracha bar priyat gafen. Okay, Kiddush, you said a bracha bar priyat gafen. So therefore, the bracha that was said on Kiddush covers anything that you're going to have during the meal. Okay, so therefore, if you're the one making Kiddush, and you had wine, so that will exempt any other wine that's going to come. Okay, so if you have a glass of wine during the meal, it's covered. No problem, because the wine takes care of it. Now, it should be pointed out that is only true if you had wine when Kiddush was recited. However, if you are a guest at someone's table, and for whatever reason, you could be yotze Kiddush without drinking any wine. Right? As we know, you got Kiddush and Shul, the rabbi makes Kiddush, very often nobody drinks wine other than the rabbi. Fine, it's all good. The only thing is that now the bracha bar priyat gafen that was said doesn't help me. It helps the rabbi, but it doesn't help me because I didn't have any wine. So if you were at such a meal and you wanted to have wine during the meal, then you have to say a bracha. Because wine is considered chashuv, and since it's chashuv, it's not exempt by the bracha that's made on bread. And the only way to get around it is if you said in advance of the meal a bracha bar priyat gafen, that would be good too. If you had wine, it should be for the meal. Yeah, yes.
How about like a special wine?
Okay, special wine, there's a question, a different discussion. If you made a bracha on simple wine, if you made Kiddush and then a better wine was brought to the table, so it would cover that also, but there is a question that there's another bracha called Tov HaMeitiv that would have to be recited on that. That's a discussion in its own right. But I'm just saying, typically speaking, if you make Kiddush, it covers the wine during the meal, but only if you drank some of the wine. You have to drink some of that wine in order for that to happen. Okay, so that takes care of that. So wine, that would be as far as wine goes. Now, when it comes to coffee and tea, okay, now we really start trouble. Okay, now coffee and tea, so now you will say, so you have to say a bracha on coffee at the end of the meal. So you'll say it's blasphemous to suggest such a thing, but the question again would be, that what is the purpose of that coffee? If the purpose of that coffee is to wash it down, then you for sure don't have to say a bracha. But it's not always the case. Very often people have coffee and tea at the end of a Shabbos meal just because they already had many drinks to quench their thirst. It's just the custom for some reason that it developed that you have a hot drink at the end. Here there is a debate whether or not you have to say a bracha on the coffee or the tea. Now, it just so happens to be that generally, here again, we go back to the Kiddush factor. If you made Kiddush, so the bracha on wine exempts all the wine you can have during the meal, but not only that, but wine also exempts all other drinks, not just bar priyat gafen drinks. So if a person had made Kiddush and then drinks soda, he doesn't have to say a bracha on the soda, which is very important to know. If you're in a shul Kiddush and you say Kiddush yourself, you didn't hear the rabbi's Kiddush, you want to say your own Kiddush. And now, after Kiddush, you drank the wine, and now you want to drink soda with the chones, or whatever they have, water, who knows what, right? You don't say a bracha on that, right? It would be a bracha of atola to say a bracha on that drink, because of the fact that the bracha that's set on wine exempts that. It exempts that. That's the power of a bracha that's set on wine. Now, truth be told, there is a question if you only had a little bit of wine, if you didn't have a revius, or at least a molar lugmok, but if you made Kiddush and had a nice cup of wine, there's no question that you should not say a bracha on soda or anything like that. That being the case, you also wouldn't have to say the bracha on coffee or tea, because, okay, it's taken care of. I say I made Kiddush, so it's all good. Okay, but, however, if you're in a weekday meal where there is no Kiddush, so now what do you say about that? So here there's a big debate, and the minute of most people seems to be that they don't say it. Just for the record, again, not trying to make too many problems here. Mr. Brewer says, if you ever see someone, I'm telling you this today, if you ever see someone do it, you shouldn't think he's out of his mind. But there are people that say that you should take sugar and say a bracha on the sugar, because of the fact that sugar, if eaten in and of itself, would surely not be exempted by the bracha of Hamotzi, because what role does that play? Like, where does straight sugar, what does that do? So there are people that make a bracha, especially in the old days, where they used to have the sugar cubes, right? The sugar cubes, so a person would say a bracha on the sugar cube, and that way would not have to say a bracha on coffee or tea. There are people that do this. I'm not telling you should do this, but if you ever see someone that does, that's why. In other words, that's the reason. The reason is because if you follow the logic, in other words, coffee and tea, why should why should that be covered? You're not drinking. If you're drinking it, like here, we have a Danish with coffee. That, so then, okay, you know, okay, here nobody washed. But the point is that clearly the coffee is the drink of the meal. If coffee is the drink of the meal, you don't have to say a bracha on it. That's pashut. But and tea the same way. In the Middle Eastern countries or different parts of the world where tea is like the drink. All right, that people sit and drink, maybe in the Oriental and the Chinese restaurants, they serve very often, you know, the things of tea. So if that's the drink, that's the drink. For sure you don't say a bracha. But in our times, there is a question. Okay, but nevertheless, I say the minhag, most people don't do it. Most people just assume it's covered, and that's the way it is. Okay, now I'm going to finish right now with just the last couple of points. Okay, now we come to dessert. Now when you come to cake for dessert, okay, now here you have, again, the question, okay, we're going to have a piece of chocolate cake with whipped cream for dessert. What is that? So how does that stack up? So you'll say, well, it has nothing to do with the bread. It has nothing to do with the bread. Right? No one eats bread and chocolate cake. That's for sure. No one's ever seen anyone do that. So the question is, that then you should have to say a bracha on it. However, there's a different reason. There are several possible reasons why a person would not have to say a bracha on a cake eaten at the end of the meal. Okay, one of them would be if the person is still hungry. If the person is still hungry, meaning if the person is eating the cake, which happens that a person has eaten at the meal, but he's trying to be polite, so he's not, he's in public, so he restrains himself, doesn't eat as much as he would necessarily want to, and comes to dessert, the person's still a little hungry, so now cake is being served, so this is going to sort of finish it off. I'll finish it off with a nice piece of cake. Then there is no question that you don't say a bracha. Because that cake is part of the ikar suda. It's part of the ikar suda because it's coming to fill you up. So even though you'll say, well, no one eats cake with bread, but most people don't eat steak with bread either. And that doesn't matter, because we have already established, according to the Rush, that all it takes is that this is coming to satiate me. So if it's coming to satiate me, I don't have to say a bracha. Okay, now what happens if that's not the case? So if that's, and you just want to have a sweet taste in your meal at the end, in your mouth at the end. So here, there's a very, here also, it's not clear. And the reason for that is because it is not clear that cake is not considered bread outright, because there are opinions in the Gemara that even though cake, you'll say, well, no one puts tuna fish in between two pieces of chocolate cake, right? So nobody uses cake to even think about it. I'm sorry if I took away anyone's appetite just mentioning that. But the fact of the matter is that nobody does that, but nevertheless, cake might be considered bread. There is a category in halacha called pasavah v'kisnin that in certain situations, there are certain type of cake that is clearly not considered bread. But it's very unclear. There are three different criteria, three opinions, what it takes to be out of the league of bread. And most cakes don't satisfy all three opinions. So therefore, it'll end up that any piece of cake that you're going to have is going to be, you wouldn't have to say a bracha on it because of the fact, first of all, if it's filling you up, you for sure don't have to say a bracha. Second of all, even if it's not, but it may be considered pas, so therefore the bracha of hamotzi directly covers it. So there's no reason, it doesn't matter. If you said hamotzi, you said hamotzi, so that's it, this is bread, finished. There are, the only type of cake that clearly fits the designation of not being bread according to all opinions would be a cake, it would be a pie with a hard crust, like a piece of apple pie. A piece of apple pie would be, without going into it, it would fit, under no definition of bread would that be considered bread. Okay, so there one would have the question. So the way to deal with that would be to do one of the following. The way to do that would deal with that would be, first of all, if you're still hungry, there's no question. If you're not hungry, so then, when a person, if you're aware of this possibility, when you said the bracha of hamotzi, you had in mind that it should cover this. So, b'di'eved, the bracha of hamotzi could cover cake, even if cake is not considered bread. Okay, so therefore, if a person said hamotzi on that, then, and they had in mind that this should cover the apple pie that I'm gonna have at the end of the meal, that would take care of it. Okay, so therefore, typically people don't say bracha on pie at the end of the meal. Regular cake, there's no question. There's no question. Okay, and even if you're not hungry, because of the fact that it falls into the suffix, and you suffix, you wouldn't say a bracha. Okay, but if you, the apple pie, that would be a question, and that leaves us with just two small cases left. A person having ice cream at the end of the meal, typically, commonly served ice cream. So ice cream does not fit, would not be considered in any way part of the meal. It's clearly a dessert that doesn't fill you up. You wouldn't say, even if you're still hungry, but you're not eating the ice cream to fill you up. So ice cream should require a bracha, and many people do say a bracha on ice cream served at the end of a meal. And, you know, there is an opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein, I don't know where it's written, I do not believe it's in his tshuvas, but that it's claimed in that Rav Moshe Feinstein said a person should not say a bracha on ice cream at the end of a meal because it melts into a liquid, then it's considered like a liquid. And therefore, on a drink, you wouldn't say a bracha, so therefore you wouldn't say a bracha on this either. It's very hard to understand that, because even if that's true, but on that type of drink, you would say a bracha. In other words, if you had a malted at the end of a meal, so that's not coming to wash down the food, right? That's coming just because you want to have a sweet taste in your mouth. So even if he's right that if it melts, it's considered a liquid, but why should that matter? But nonetheless, this is what he said, and therefore there are people that will not say a bracha on ice cream. Whatever you do, I think most people do say it. Fruit, finally. Fruit served for dessert, there is pretty much no question that you have to say a bracha on. Okay, if a person can have watermelon at the end of a meal, you have to say bracha bar priya adama. If a person can have other fruit, grapes, you have to say bracha bar priya. Okay, if you eat it with bread, it could be it's different, but nobody likes doing that. So therefore, generally speaking, a person would have to say a bracha. Cooked fruit, like what's called kompot, you know, the old European concoction where they cook fruit and make a mixture out of it, it would seem one would also say a bracha. There are widespread rumors that are brought in Sfarim that the Chafetz Chaim, a famous rumor that the Chafetz Chaim at the end of his life was told his son-in-law that he does not think you have to say a bracha on it, because since it's cooked, it's like a real Michael, and therefore it would be considered like a course at the meal, and that's what they claim. It's debated whether that's true. There are people that feel strongly that it's not accurate. There are other people that claim 100% it is accurate. So there, it's really up to the person. Yes, sure.